here we are again to talk some more Kung Fu, sir.
Always talking. More conversations about Kung Fu.
I'm excited because this one kind of picks up where our last conversation went off. Mm. But before we do that, we need to introduce ourselves. My name is Randall Davis.
And I'm Owen Schelling.
And you have a little school in Boulder known as?
Boulder Internal Arts.
Which has a great blog spot, which has a great Instagram,
yeah.
Which has a great Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've even got like a little tiny YouTube page. You got a couple videos up. Yeah. So yeah, you can get a hold of it.
From about 1,000 years ago.
We were younger men. I can tell you that much.
That is for sure.
My name is Randall Davis, head coach at Red Force Chinese Boxing. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, all the stuff. And I'm starting up next month, which is April and May, down at 5280 Shaolin. I will be teaching every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. I hope to see you guys down there. Look up Denver Shaolin and Tai Chi or 5280 Shaolin and look for the portal to sign up. And if you got some friends in Colorado, send them my way. I'd love to meet them. If they know Wing Chun, great. I'll show them something different. If they don't know martial arts at all and they've always wanted to check something out, I'll be able to give them a solid foundation in Wing Chun Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. You can also find us, Kung Fu Conversations, at email, gmail.com, kungfuconversations@gmail.com. We have an Instagram account. We have a Facebook account. We have a YouTube. We have a fourth door account, fourth wall, and you can find that on – a link for that on our Instagram and our YouTube where you can pick up some awesome T-shirts.
Yep.
You can pick up a sweet old trucker's hat, and then there's some great posters of some of the great artwork that our friend Spencer Nutella – has produced for us. And thank you, Spencer.
Thank you, Spencer.
You can also find us at Buy Me a Coffee at Kung Fu Con Pod. Excuse me, I get choked up and emotional when I say that. That's Kung Fu Con Pod at Buy Me a Coffee. And here we are. And here we go.
Here we go.
So our last conversation that we had, Owen, talked about, do we really need the forms?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So something that I've noticed, and I'm going to pick on the world of Xing Yi to start off with. And then I'm going to bring it over to Wing Chun because I know much more about Wing Chun than I do Xing Yi. I'm lucky to be a student of yours in the Xing Yi. I've noticed that a lot of schools that do Xing Yi, they're, how do I say this? They're two-man practice, like they're entry drills. They're, maybe they have a hand combination, a little bit like what we would refer to as sanpada. You know, whatever their two-man sets are, whatever their practice of the expression of Xing Yi as a martial art or even a self-defense methodology, you know, like countering some joint locks or things like that. Sometimes I've seen it where they're really good at the forms and they express all of the principles that make up the forms. But when they do their martial practices, it goes to shit.
Mm.
They lose everything. All those pearls of principles that they've stacked up and worked their butts off to produce in the kata or the form or the talu, whatever you want to call it. And then when they get into the practice with the partners, it all goes out the window.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you guys doing? So do you feel that that is something that's being missed in the drilling of the systems? If you have drills in your systems, like the two-man sets and the forms and stuff like that. Do you think that that might be somewhere where people are forgetting that you need to keep those physical qualities in your body when you're doing the two-man work?
Yeah, for real. I think that's exactly right. And I also think that that outcome, I think, and at least in my sort of limited experience, is based on like one of two things. Either the student was taught too fast and they haven't put in the time that it's needed. You know, they just simply haven't, they learned a bunch of stuff and then they're like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and start practicing this. And they just start doing the drills or they just start sparring or whatever. And you know, those, if the drilling itself is a skill.
Yes.
And it's meant to teach other skills, but the actual act of drilling with somebody in terms of timing and pressure and, just the action, the choreography of the drill itself is a skill, and to be able to learn those efficiently, in the correct way, at least as far as like Xing Yi or Bagua or maybe even Tai Chi to a certain extent, goes is that's, you know, incumbent upon the teacher and it's also incumbent upon the student. So, you know, maybe the student just learned all that stuff too quickly. Maybe they just, you know,
They just haven't practiced enough.
Or a teacher doesn't have a clear path to bridge that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think one thing that is pretty cool about Wing Chun, and maybe makes it accessible in that, and we're not going to, I'm not going to call Wing Chun an internal art or anything like that, but that's my personal opinion. And if you have a different one, please do not change your opinion to fit mine. Have your own opinion. We're all adults here. It's okay, folks. I won't tell anybody. One thing that I like about the Wing Chun is I was talking about how, you know, if I'm going to introduce a student, I'm going to introduce them to the stance, and then I'm going to introduce it to them statically, and then I'm going to introduce them to lead legs, and then I'm going to introduce them to shifting, and then I'm going to introduce them to making sure their posture's right, right? And then that's starting to create the structure. Then the final part is the hand position with the guard hands, with the Lin Wan Kin, or the ruffle or drum punch, whatever you want to call it in English, those kind of things. But what's cool about that is the two-man drills, or the two-person drills, if you will, they all keep the Wing Chun principles intact mm-hmm. while you're executing them. So I think that that system is really accessible for taking the physical principles that are taught in Wing Chun and putting it in the two-man set. Mm. And I really like that. I you know, when I was listening to our friend Rosa May, she was on the Gong Fu crew recently, and excellent interview over there.
Shout out to Gong Fu crew.
Yeah. Hey, Gong Fu crew. And Rosa May. I miss you, girl.
And Rosa May.
We got to pick on you soon. She was our first guest. Go back and listen to that one if you haven't listened
to it. Yeah, it was a good interview.
It was a great interview. And Rosa talks about that with her Wuxing Tongbei. Mm-hmm. She's like, listen, our practice, our physical body skill method is our entry drills, is our partner work, is our, you know, she's like, it might be two moves and they might even be in place, but that's our whole form. Mm-hmm. That is a whole form right there. And that is a two-man set. And that is, you know, a two-person set. And that is an entry. And that is an attack. And so it's interesting because just as many different styles of kata and form understanding through whatever specific system you're training, there's also just as many different ways to train drills.
Yeah.
And express whatever system it is that you're training. I mean, it would be fascinating to, show like a Western wrestler, like somebody that does high school Greco-Roman or something like that, even in high school, and show them some of the belt drills that are in Shuai Jiao and just ask them, what kind of martial arts do you think this is?
Sure.
You know, forget the, you know, the practical uses and application of building power for throwing and martial ability, but just looking at somebody doing those drills and trying to have a poor kid that, you know, maybe have never seen anything like that look so foreign. What do you think martial arts that plugs into, you know, and how many of them would actually say a grappling system,
right?
You know, and actually tie it back into their own previous work.
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, to go back to what we were talking about in terms of the two person drilling, or in your example, like the solo person drilling or drilling with some sort of tool or a prop or something. I think that a lot of two-person drills, you know, they, at least in my experience, a lot of people have sort of lost the context. It's like, well, why was this drill invented? Or what specifically are we supposed to be learning? Because each drill is designed to teach a skill. Or better yet, if you have a good drill, you can use it to teach multiple skills.
Absolutely.
Right? So then you only have to have one drill, and you can learn a lot of different skill sets around that. And whether that may be distance, it may be timing, it may be power, it may be position. I mean, there's so many things that can come out of a single drill. And each one of those things needs to have its time in the sun in terms of your practice.
Ooh, yeah.
You know,
as far as pinpointing it, be like,
yeah,
look at what this is teaching you.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's even along those same lines, it's like, well, maybe we'll just take this drill. Maybe it's for, you know, Xingyi Bang Chuan. You need to take a Bang Chuan drill and you're like, okay, so this drill, I can use it to train power. I can use it to train distance. I can use it to train, timing. I can, you know, so you can start to take those drills and make permutations of them. And it's a single drill, but you can use it for a lot of different things.
Sure.
And the further I get in my coming up on year 30 of doing Kung Fu,
the further I get down the road, the more I appreciate those drills, the sort of larger contextual drills, because they really, really help. You know, you can just take a single drill, and once you get the choreography, then it becomes fun. Because you can, sure. You can really work on individual skills. Just it's like, hey, let's just take a couple of weeks. We're going to practice the shit out of this drill.
Yep.
But we're just going to focus on this, or we're just going to focus on the timing, or the tempo, or the hand placement, or the arrival, or the idea behind what's next. Like, what does it set up?
Oh, you know, that's a great one.
There's tons, yeah, and tons
the transitional tons. Quality yeah. of that drill. You yeah, betcha.
Loads of conceptual things that can come out of those that style of drilling.
For me, at least in Wing Chun, and it's so funny too, because now we're going to talk about preference and the two different hats we wear. As a practitioner, one of my least favorite drills is Pak Punch. As a teacher, that is my number one drill.
Nice.
Because it doesn't matter if you've been with me for day one or 5 to 10 years down the road, I can point something out to that drill and be like, look, it's over here. I was like, what? That's crazy. I didn't realize that was actually in a form. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, look, this is this over here. This is a concept of this. This is this timing. And so I've got that drill where it is my, you know, one of my first drills that I teach, but I've got it stacked and layered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can teach it to at least probably not some grandmaster or high level master, but somebody that's intermediate to you know, a good like C plus to B minus level of Wing Chun. Mm-hmm. I can show them some other things to an intermediate practitioner. And I really feel like even somebody on that scale could be like, oh, that's a good way to look at that. I've never really looked at that. Or even a rookie. Okay. Here's the two things. And again, remember we were talking about this as a rookie. I don't need to overload you. You're only going to be able to handle and juggle so many principles, so many concepts at once.
Yeah.
And so as a rookie, I might teach you one or two things. Okay, how to clear the hand, how to hit at the same spot, and are your elbows sunk, and not raise your shoulders. Maybe right. those four things. And you're going to work on that for 2 or 3 months. And then when I think you're kind of sort of proficient at it, I'm like, here's what else it does. Mm-hmm. Here's what else it does. You know, maybe one. Maybe I just give you one thing. And those little carrots, those little one extra pieces, at least for me when I'm a practitioner and I'm learning something, is that extra piece to go, okay, I'm going to keep practicing this. Because there's another piece to that, and I've got to integrate that other piece and that understanding into the physical part too. Because I might have the intellectual side of it, but now I've got to physically inject that learning, that wisdom, that knowledge that's in the drill or the skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's really – it's difficult, I think, from a student point of view, at least when I was a student, to be able to honestly evaluate when you've really got a handle on it, right? It's like somebody teaches you, you do that drill and you're like, God damn it. I've been doing this drill for 2 months and I'm sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
And okay. Yeah, sure. I've learned 2 or 3 different things about it. I practiced these different skills around it, but you know, I'm sick of it and you know, I've got it. Right. And then, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cause then you've talked to your teacher or whatever, you talk to your Sifu and they're like, and just like you were just saying, they're like, oh, well, yeah, you haven't done this. And it's like, oh shit. Okay. That, you know, they show you a new piece that will sort of recontextualize the entire drill and it produces an entirely different sort of outcome from the outcomes that you had already put in time around. And I think that those things, I think it's really, really important to be able to understand that. But yeah, everybody's in a hurry when they're a beginner. I was for sure. And I respect that, you know, and I think that's important too, is to sort of, you know, give the students some space, and to keep their interest, you know, everybody's got different reasons for doing their Kung Fu. And we've talked about that before. And I think that it's really, you know, it's important to acknowledge that and sort of feed it to a certain extent.
One of my big learning curves as a new teacher, you know, and I would say I had this trouble for the first decade. Because I was trying to teach too fast.
Sure.
Because I was trying to feed their hunger. Like, oh, here's a little bit, here's a little bit, here's a little bit, here's a little bit. And it's not that I didn't have more food or stuff in the bag to feed the little chirps, right? The little chickens. Yep. I had more stuff, but I'm like, oh shit, they can't do any of this stuff.
They didn't get it.
They didn't get it. I'm just telling them what's there. Yeah. And they're cerebrally acquiring it,
yeah,
but they're not physically getting it, yeah, and they can't express it on a physical scale. And I'm like, oh. And that's why you do it slow.
Yeah.
Cause, and I was just as anxious to get good training partners. And guess what? You don't get good training partners that way.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you're going to have to find ways, you know, if you're isolated as a, you know, a rookie Kung Fu practitioner, whatever your skill is, and you're trying to teach people, you might not have somebody that you can train with. You're going to have to come up with ways to keep your stuff sharp that you might not be able to do with your rookie students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, yeah, that's a whole different,
That's a whole different show.
I was going to say,
we're going to save that one for later. Yeah.
Cause wow. You know, and it's, I think it's tough to practice in isolation that way. Go through long periods where, you know, you're not really, you don't have any contact, you know, you don't have a, you just don't have anybody to train with. And I think that that's really critical to developing, at least to developing those types of skills, like person to person contact skills. And I think that there's that type of training is very valuable. Now, if you've gone through that type of training in the past and you don't currently have that training, well, at least, you know, you have the benefit of hindsight. You have the benefit of understanding the value behind it. But I think that there's a lot of martial arts teachers, especially I find this a lot in the Tai Chi community, who they're just, you know, they're just training the forms. And even if they're not just training the forms, they're training the forms, maybe they're training the skills too, like the gongs and the pieces.
Sure.
And so their students, you know, you see them and they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. They look, the pieces look correct and things look like they're moving the way they should. And they are, but the problem becomes then, okay. Yeah. As soon as you start to, you know, do any kind of drilling or any kind of,
pushing hands.
Yeah. Any
entries.
Yeah. Any kind of two person work. And once again, we're back to the beginning, right? It falls apart. Like they may have the skills in their body, but when you put that skill into an environment where there's some sort of another person to push against that, it comes up short. And that happens. That happens a lot, especially with the Tai Chi people.
And doubling it up, just like you said, there has to be a bridge from taking it from the form practice, mm-hmm. and integrating all those skills from the forms to the drilling practice,
yeah.
and integrating it there.
And I think that's so, so, so important. And I the older I get, the more I realize as a teacher how important that bridge is, and that bridge is clear, that bridge is concise, and it's expressed to the student in a way that they can understand and verbalize. That, you know, that there's a methodology behind it that everybody understands. And that is something, you know, like I didn't have early on in my martial arts universe. It was like, here's the form, go spar. Here's the form, go spar.
Sure.
You know, and yeah, and I mean, it ends up basically, you know, it creates a lot of, like, I won't say it's not positive outcomes.
Confusion and bloody noses?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, it creates a lot of injury to start with, because I got injured a lot trying to learn how to use it. And then the other problem is like a lot of the applications are kind of remedial, because there's no progressive drilling around how to use it. And I think that understanding the progressive drilling, thank you, Tim Carmel. Thank you, Lotus Show. Thank you, Marcus Brinkman. You know, thank you, Matt Autry. Those were my teachers. Those guys really, really showed me just an invaluable methodology around how to do that and how to structure those practices. Because without those guys, I really wouldn't, I would for sure wouldn't be where I am today. And I find that is a gift that just keeps on giving, regardless of, you know, what I'm learning or how I'm learning, to be able to deconstruct something and to be able to understand the applications, be able to put those into some kind of progressive drill, whether that's a push hands drill or it's just a two person drill or whatever, and then be able to ramp it up and be able to make it more effective. And then, you know, be able to extrapolate that and take it beyond, like, into a sparring environment, if necessary, you know.